Okay.
There we go.
All right, so I sent out an agenda, so we're going to start with the SRTL, and Harla had just sent out the two-page summary.
Yeah, did everybody get that in their email?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So basically, I had gotten the announcement for the next SRTL conference a while back and just kind of let it sit in my inbox, and then was looking at it and realized that the deadline was this Friday. And when looking at the theme, I thought that our research for this cluster could actually be a really nice fit for the theme. So I decided somewhat last minute to put together, you have to do a two-page introduction to what it is, or a two-page overview of the research you want to present, and then you apply and you have to be invited. So even doing all this, they may find, and they said they try and mix a bunch of different things about who they invite, because it's a very small group. So there's no guarantee that I'll be going and presenting everything, but I thought it seemed like a good idea at least to try for. And when I emailed Jackie and Tara and Lee, it seemed like you guys agreed. So I worked on this introduction yesterday. And basically, I give an overview. I'll at some point give an overview of the four of us in the cluster and mention who our mentors are. But what you have in the document in front of you is an overview really more of the research, where I did a very brief overview of the lit review, and the concept maps were awesome for that. So our work that went into the concept maps, I think they were really good. And I just had to highlight here because I didn't have a lot of space. And then try to highlight what I think the connection to the theme is. So technically the theme is new approaches to reasoning about sampling, samples or sampling for informal inference. But the way I look at it is, you know, we are looking to some extent at how students reason about a sample. Can they reason through what makes a good sample, what makes a poor sample? And we're looking at that through the frame of context, because we saw from our literature that context has kind of these unintended consequences sometimes, but it's in that it's distracting, but that it's very important for our discipline. To some extent, it's one of the defining characteristics of our discipline, is that context is so important to everything we do. So I try and make the argument then in the section on practical and theoretical contribution to the theme that this is something that really does need to be explored a little bit more, and so that's what we're trying to do. Then I go into our methodology. I basically took Tara's flowchart and did a very quick overview, leaving out a lot of the specifics simply because there wasn't space in this document, and in the presentation that I'm shooting for is a 15-minute presentation, so very much like a JSN style. So there probably won't be time for too much detail on methodology, but hopefully I hit the highlights of it adequately here, and then our expected results, what we would expect to see, and hopefully those things are reasonably consistent with the flow chart that Tara put together. And based on our conversations, this all has to be submitted today, but based on our conversation this morning, if we end up tweaking the methodology a little bit, I can tweak this document before submitting it. So that is SRTL. Questions, comments, concerns?
Actually, I really like this. I think it looks good.
Thank you. I was somewhat panicked yesterday when I realized, you know, like, wow, this is due tomorrow and I have to write two pages. But going back to the concept map, between my map and Tara's map, it really had everything for the lit review laid out nicely. I definitely think we should get moving on that paper because we've already done a lot of the thought work in the organization, and I think we have some good stuff. So that was nice to see. It actually made it all come together fairly easily.
Pointed out to me, I don't think this is a problem with the abstract, but in the table, in the second column where the study uses poor sampling methods, and the second row.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure what would be learned from those answers. You know, you wouldn't necessarily know if it was because of the opinion or because of the sampling. A cell where that seemed to be an issue for me.
That actually is true, and I kind of noticed, and I was thinking about that actually as I went through, and maybe that's something we need to talk about a little bit in the methodology today, about how can we address that, or how can we tweak what we were planning on doing to actually give us more information in the student responses, or to get more informative responses back from students. Because I was noticing that too as I was going through and writing it up.
Anyone else have anything on SRTIA?
Other than if you can get me a ticket there too, that'd be awesome. But
okay, this is the thing in the Netherlands?
Yes.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm also, you need a previous SRTL participant to sponsor you in some sense or agree to ask as a reference for you before you can attend this conference. So I've emailed this two-page document to Joan, and she said she would take a look at it and hopefully she'll agree to be my sponsor. So hopefully by the end of the day today I'll be able to submit all of this, and then we'll see if even I get to go visit the Netherlands. I'll definitely bring back souvenirs for everyone, though, if I do.
Wait, bring back what?
Souvenirs.
Uh-huh.
Get you like a nice snow globe or something.
Chocolate, maybe.
Yeah, okay, chocolate. So that, I think they said that the decision would come towards the end of the year or early next year. So even after I submit this today, it'll be a couple months before we really know what's going on. I really imagine, though, since that the presentation we would submit for here would probably be similar to the presentation that we would submit for JSM, which is why I didn't really think this would be too much extra work for anyone, even for me. So, and I think it could just be a really good chance for us to get some feedback. I mean, the whole point of this conference is really to kind of have a group of people that can look at interviews and talk about data. At least that's the impression I've got from reading things. So I think it could be some really good feedback for us, where it might give us like a broader dissemination of this work in the end too, because there's also usually some sort of either book or proceedings that comes out of this conference. So it could give us, if we do get accepted, it could give us a wider, good ideas for continuing the research and kind of a wider audience for what we've done thus far.
Herla, when is the actual conference?
July of 2011, the 17th to the 23rd.
So by then, we would hopefully have some data, have everything.
Yeah, because that's really only a couple weeks before JSM, so we have to have our
documents. Oh, so you were talking about next year's JSM, not this year's JSM. Sorry, my brain was...
Yeah, the 11th.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. We had talked about doing another presentation for next year's JSM, so I'm looking ahead to that.
Okay.
We'll also have to have something for the USCUS meeting next year, right? Isn't that in June?
Yeah.
Yeah.
May, actually.
May?
Yeah,
it's in May. It moved back to May. I don't know why they moved it back to May. It's in North Carolina, though, so if you guys can come, you can all come visit me.
I think it's in May because that's when it originally was, and because a lot of people do the AP reading in June, and so that's a lot of traveling back-to-back for a lot of people. So,
it's in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Yep.
I am.
North Carolina State is one of the primary conferences. That way it did not eventually become the OSU Conference on Teaching Statistics.
Is it at the end of May?
Yeah, the dates, if you go, I can look
it
up.
I think it's the 19th to the 21st.
Yeah, it's like a weekend. It starts on a Thursday. Huh, the next big thing, yeah.
Oh, good.
May 19th to the 21st. Yeah, if you go to CAUSE, there's actually little button right on the front page now. They've actually got some information up about it. So.
And does anyone know, I mean, I had emailed Hurl about this, but does anyone know how we, like, submit to present there other than a poster?
I think actually we're required to. It's part of the program.
The Cosmos, the research cluster thing?
Yeah, I think we're just automatically in.
That was because I know only one of the clusters presented last time, and the other ones had posters, so I didn't know.
I'm actually on the posters committee, so I can talk to Jackie Miller, who's the other posters and beyond person, and I can find out exactly what we have to do. We may have to submit an abstract at some point. I don't know if we decide or if they decide or whether we're doing a session or a poster or what exactly that all. I don't know if the research board, if the RAP members know how that works. Randy? Felicity?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last part. You were asking about the abstract submission.
For USCOTS, like, do you know
right.
what we do for USCOTS?
Like you were saying, some groups presented posters last time, and others were. I think there was one group, like you said, actually, that did a presentation. Last time the presentations were, last time the presentations were kind of an invited thing.
Okay.
Joan and some others in the research advisory board decided kind of that they'd like to ask some groups or one group, I guess, to present. And then the others, I think everyone have submitted a poster presentation proposal.
Okay.
So I'm not sure, and you said you're on the poster committee.
Yeah, Jackie Miller and
sure
I are doing
what,
the, and one other person.
So you probably know what the deadline for that one is.
You would think that I would.
Or maybe they don't have it set yet. That could be, because I know that with the Research Advisory Board, we haven't, we usually have the USCOTS planning meeting for the stuff that we're going to do sometime in November. So in the next month or two, we should be having that planning meeting, and there should be a clear picture of, like, what role the research cluster, the individual research clusters will play in USCOTS. So that should become clear pretty soon.
Okay. I think Jackie said something about January. Sometime in January is going to be the abstract,
yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly, but I may just be making that up. Because she said something about going through them in March. I know that really didn't make any sense. But for some reason, I remember
the timeline they had last time, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it was like January was a deadline, and there's a couple months for feedback or something, and then I'm not remembering exactly.
So everyone, I just noticed an email come through from Holly Lynn. She sent it to all of us and just said she is stuck in a meeting that she can't leave, but if we have questions, we can try and email her, and she'll try and respond quickly. So she won't be joining us, but if we need something from her, we can try and email her. Let everyone know.
So are you guys thinking we'll do our abstract will be the same for USCOTS, JSM, and this conference in the Netherlands? Is that acceptable? There doesn't have to be some variation on them?
I don't think so. I know Jennifer Kaplan's group has been doing more or less
the same thing.
The same thing with the lexical ambiguity. I think that they've presented at a couple different conferences.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody correct me if I'm wrong.
My understanding is that with presentations, you kind of, like, I've always imagined it as you make the rounds with your presentation. You know, you kind of have the work you're doing, and you make the rounds. You go to colleges, you go to conferences. So I think with presentations, it's okay, although the abstract, I think, certainly could be the same or very similar, but we'll need to keep in mind the purpose of the different conferences, and we might have to tweak the presentation a little bit accordingly. Like, if we do get asked to do a full-fledged presentation at EFCOT, those have to be interactive. They
right.
can't be the 15 minutes, let me give you the overview, and then I'll take time for questions. So we'll have to, if we end up doing full-fledged presentations at all three, we'll probably have to tweak the presentations a little bit for the various conferences, but I think the abstract will be probably the same, or at least very, very similar for each.
And I think it's pretty well understood that a lot of times with the, you know, abstract submission being so early compared to when you're going to present that sometimes it's going to differ by the time you actually get to the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's different. In engineering, like, you can't take the same thing that you did at one conference usually. They won't accept it at another. And
yeah.
So that's why I was asking, because it's just different. It, you know, it's two different fields, and I've not done a lot in the field of education, so.
Yeah. I think I know in some fields, conferences are the equivalent of, like, peer-reviewed journals. Like, they don't publish in journals they predominantly present at conferences, so there it might be a bigger deal. But I think in a field like statistics or in education where you are – predominantly expected to publish in a peer-reviewed journal, I think there's a little more leeway in conferences.
That makes sense. Yeah, because ours, you know, my engineering conferences, we always had books that were published that had kind of one-page summaries of our research and stuff in them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that might just be a disciplinary difference.
Right.
So should we turn our attention to the research methodology then? Or what, I'm sorry, what was second on the agenda?
Second is research methodology. I sent out the flowchart based on last month's conference call last night. Hopefully everybody got it. I tried posting it in Google Docs, and it was just a huge mess. So did everybody get the file I sent, though?
Yeah, I have it.
Yeah, I just downloaded mine from Google Docs, and then it looked much nicer.
Oh, okay. Good. Because I was like,
what? Yeah, I don't think this is what Tara sent. So,
so basically, I just took what we talked about at the conference call along with some of Herla's definitions and some of Herla's ideas and summarized it in flowchart form. I think the big question, I just put one example for the neutral questions on it, and I think, Hurley, you had expressed some concerns about having to identify the students who would get the appropriate questions and having to hand out papers and stuff because you have such a large class.
Yeah, thinking very pragmatically, I mean, the sections, the class that I'm imagining implementing this in, our large intro class, the sections either have 65 or 100 students in them. So the one I teach right now has 100. And not all of them show up. I probably have closer to 80 that show up each time. So it would really mean, if it involves actually pre-printing everything so that we can get kind of the blocking that we want, where we're blocking on opinion, strength of opinion, I'm a little concerned about that because I do a lot of activities. I do hand out a lot of worksheets, which I collect in class, but they're typically much more informal. The students just kind of gather in groups of, you know, three or four based on who they're sitting near. They write their names on the top. They write their work, and then they pass it all forward. I'm concerned about the actual amount of time it will take to have to pass out individual papers, either call people by name or pass around a stack and have students look for their name. I'm afraid that'll just eat up too much time. And I think it's really the passing out predominantly. I'm afraid that will just eat up way too much time.
We were looking at doing this primarily on exams. Is that correct?
I think that was the conclusion we reached at the end of last
call. I don't know if this is doable, I guess, for you, Herla, because not every professor is different. But could you give assigned seats, like exam days, and then you could make sure they're in that order already to pass out?
That is something I could possibly do. I was imagining that we were doing some combination of activities that would take place in a regular class and exam questions. because I would imagine some of these coming up earlier in the term than others. So for the particularly for the ones where they're kind of like an activity in class, I don't know if I could really have them logistically in any particular order.
Carla, could you just have like a list of people who fell into the agrees, a list of people who fell into the disagrees, and just if we do the questions one at a time, could you just put up a list of names and say these people I want over here, these people I want here, and these people I want on that side, and just pass out a whole to one group at a, you know what I mean?
I could. It's still going to take a lot of time to shuffle. These students are very slow. I've tried things that involve them getting up and moving, and it's like I ask them to go run a mile. We have different institutions, and we have different classes.
That was what I was going to say.
We still have to do everything the same, right? Would it work if I just did mine as kind of more a random assignment? So I print out equal numbers of the either two or four different types of questions that we have, and I just randomly shuffle them into a stack and just pass the stack out. And so we won't get blocking, but we'll have some sort of randomness. And then you guys maybe could achieve a little bit more control and you could do blocking. Do you think there would be a problem with maybe using two different methodologies like that?
Well, that was actually what Holly Lynn suggested at the end of the phone call last time.
She
was
did.
That, you know, in the pilot stage, why don't, you know, if we're not quite sure what we're going to get from all this data and exactly how everything's going to work, maybe we should try piloting a couple different methods at the different institutions and just kind of see what works and what we're happy with and what we're not happy with. And since it sounds like Hurla, there's just really nothing that's going to work in terms of blocking for you, maybe we let you do the sort of just shuffle the papers and hand them out method, and then Tara, Jackie, and I can try to do something that involves a little bit more blocking, and we look at what we're getting from the data and see if the blocking is really necessary, if we're really getting something from that data that we're not getting from Hurla's data. Does that make sense? Especially since it's just a pilot study at this point.
Sounds like a good idea. I mean, that's the purpose. That's one of the purposes of a pilot study, right? To pilot your procedure.
Mm-hmm. I only have 30 students per class, so I certainly can do blocking. Do you, Jackie and Lee, do you have small enough classes to do it?
Yeah, I've got 25, 26, 27 in my two classes, so this is not an issue for me.
Yeah, mine are about 35 apiece, so and they generally sit in the same seat, even though there's not assigned seating. So.
Okay.
The other thing I have to deal with is there is a chance I may not be teaching this course when we actually go to full-scale implementation. So I have to come up with implementation procedures that are straightforward enough that a first-time graduate student instructor can follow. So I think, you know, just having it be straightforward. I'll hand you the handout, you know, I'll do all the shuffling and everything. I'll do all the printing and the shuffling in advance and give them to the TA if that's what it comes down to, and have the TA just pass them out in class and just collect them back, rather than making sure the TA knows that they've got to get the students to shuffle or that they've got to pass out things individually and all of that. So
I know it might be a little bit extra work for you, but do you think you could even be like at least there maybe the first day that the TA has to do this?
Probably, yeah.
Just to kind of, you know, supervise.
Once they don't have something scheduled at the same time, I definitely could.
Yeah.
Big a deal.
I mean, if it's simple enough where they just have to hand out papers and collect them, it probably is not something that I'm hoping a TA could handle that.
Hopefully. So, you know, students and TAs continually surprising. Okay, I'm sure people said that about me when I was a TA, too. Yeah, the other thing I'm thinking about the code, where we imagine these that students would be writing the code instead of writing their name?
No, but Holly Lynn said that we should take their papers and we should assign a code to them, and that's the data that we should work with throughout the project.
Yeah.
So when the students are working with the papers, they have names on them, but then when we take them and enter them into a computer somewhere, we strip the name and put a code in place.
That's what she suggested, I believe.
All right,
yeah, that's what we should put in the IRB, and then if it comes back from IRB and they just have a conniption fit, then we'll just deal with that when it comes back. But, yeah, basically let students just put their names on the papers, and we turn it into a code as we're entering the data. And so then from there on, it's coded data.
All right. I think that seems reasonable.
Because, yeah, obviously if they're taking a test, they got to put their name on the test.
Right. Okay. So starting from the top, we all agreed that we would do the opinion survey the first week, right?
Except for obviously this semester.
Right, yeah. Except for this semester.
And we are doing that as paper now. We're not going to try and do, so I don't need to try to put this back on whatever the heck it was.
Correct.
SurveyMonkey.
Yeah, SurveyMonkey. Thank you.
Yeah, I think paper is fine.
Okay.
Okay. And are we all, I emailed the three of you about how many questions to include, and Herla responded back that a subset, so I just said 10. Is that, instead of doing all the ones that we put on the initial opinion survey, just select 10 of them, six of which are our actual topics? Are you guys okay with that? You want more or less?
I think 10's fine.
Yeah, that seems...
And I would think maybe the other four we can maybe, you know, pick of ones that, you know, we thought maybe should have gone better, and maybe see if they do go better when we can, in a sense, force our students to fill it out.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems fine.
So do we want to go ahead and try to, not right now, obviously, because we still have a lot to talk about, but between now and the next conference call through email, do we want to finalize the survey? Just pick our 10 questions, get that finalized so we have it done.
Yeah, that shouldn't take too long.
Should we do it? I'm just wondering, because if we're going to have to get IRB approval still this semester, we have to know exactly which questions are going to be asked.
Yeah.
Can't we, wouldn't the initial opinion survey fall under what we already have approved, since all the questions would be coming from that?
I think it matters if it, I mean, at my university, it seemed like I could just do a, you know, a continuation, but I don't know how everyone else's university is working.
Yeah, I'm trying
to
remember.
And changing it to in-class versus online is going to make a difference.
Oh,
or,
right. Okay, so let's try to get that done. I think we can do it really quickly over email,
but it's just, I think we need to get decided soon so we can get our IRB things through so we can hopefully get some data this semester.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll finalize that by email. We can try to do that in the next few days. Codes, I just made something up. Are you guys okay with code? Will that work? Is it easy enough for you guys to get student ID numbers?
Yeah, I think so for me.
I think I can find them all.
Okay.
I think it's on my roster.
That's there on our class rosters. That's why I thought it might be something okay. Oh, hold on.
I'm on the phone. I'm on the phone.
Sorry, my husband just came home.
on the phone.
He's supposed to be working. And then allocate results that we're fine with. Originally, I had split it up into the 7 categories, but then Herla suggested we split it 3-3 in the 2. Are you guys okay with that for now, for those of us who are clustering?
Okay, so 3-3 and 2. Categories. Oh, I see what you're doing. So the disagree categories, the agree categories, and the neutral. Okay.
And my only motivation for this was I just literally was a little overwhelmed at the thought of blocking on 8 different things.
Oh, yeah.
And so I thought it was much easier to block on 3.
Well, I think it'd be interesting as long as we keep, you know, the number that they actually chose somewhere. So I think it'd be interesting to possibly compare
this way of doing it versus throwing the 3 and 5 toward the neutral.
Yeah.
You know, like if they're barely picking opinions, it would be kind of interesting to see if that would make a difference in the results, if the people that just barely wanted to pick a side.
I think that sounds like a good idea, and I'm definitely in favor of retaining the original data, so I would still keep the scale exactly the way we had it on the opinion survey, but, you know, once we get that data in, we can recategorize it as we see fit, and that's fairly easy to do.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah.
So do we want to have one of us who's doing the blocking? Does one of us want to do the 1-2?
Thank you.
Does one of us want to do the 1-2s, the 6-7s, and then put the 3-5 and the 0-4s in since we're just doing the pilot study? Does that make any sense?
So do 1s and 2s together, 6s and 7s together, and then the 3-5s, 0s and 4s together?
That's what Jackie was just saying, right?
Yeah, at least we should try to do the analysis that way. I don't know if we need to do the blocking that way or not.
Well, it is a pilot, so we could just try it out and see.
Yeah, is it really going to make it that much more difficult for any one of us?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, you know, why not?
And I think it really doesn't even make a difference in the way you would write up the IRB. I think ultimately the idea is we're blocking on opinion, and I don't think the specifics of how we're defining that opinion, whether disagree is defined as 1-2-3 or 1-2, I don't think that's going to make a difference in the IRB.
Yeah.
I don't think it would affect the way we prepare anything at all. We recode things and group things in the data set.
For a pilot study, I was thinking I'll just do 3 different flowcharts. I'll do one that has Hurla's method for this, for doing questions. I'll do one that has the blocking that we just talked about, and then I'll do one for the other two who are doing the other blocking.
Okay.
Just so we have it by university.
Yeah, this is a very helpful diagram.
Yeah.
All right, so once we block, we sign, and then give questions. We need to decide which questions we're giving. We said that we would all try to do questions around the same time in the semester, right? Like when we get to certain topics.
Yeah, but I think we realize then that we're all doing different topics at different times, or at least one of us is doing topics at different times.
Yeah.
We'll probably put, you know, obviously on the most appropriate exam attached to it.
Yeah. So, like, I do hypothesis testing near the end of this. Mine would be on my 3rd test. So if we do that question, that's going to be later for me.
Well, I do it at the beginning and the end. So we start with it and end with it.
Yeah.
So I could put it on the last test also. What about, Harla, what do you do?
For us, we introduce it between the first test and the second test, but then it also shows up again on the final.
That would be mine as well.
I could go either way. It would be around, like, end of October, early November versus December for me. Well, that's this semester's time, which is fresh on my brain, so it just kind of maps onto the actual time we end up administering this. But I could either do it on my second midterm or my final.
Part of me hopes that we could probably do it more on not the final, because students have a tendency to forget everything by the time the final arrives. So sometimes I wonder, you know, not putting it on the final might be in our best interest if we can, but.
Yeah.
I could do mine on my October test, because my October test is on the stuff that we've done on hypothesis testing during the first couple weeks, and it's on the beginning of the sampling stuff. So I could do mine on my October test also.
Does anyone else have opinions about putting it on a final or worried about their student?
I am.
Okay. I thought that was just me or not.
No, we did assessment for statistics class last semester, and we failed every single category. I mean, we had categories down in the 20% for students who met the student learning outcomes, and all of our questions were on the final. So I definitely have concerns about doing it on the final.
Because you're right, they don't remember stuff.
Okay. So maybe we can try for, like, second and third test, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did we want to try to do anything in the classroom? I know we all have different teaching styles, but did we want to try to do any of the questions on in classroom activity?
With my activities, I let them work in groups. I don't think we'd be getting very good results.
Mine are groups also, so. So no.
I don't really have anything where they work by themselves in class.
I mean, I do in-class quizzes. So, I mean, I could just do it, you know, just on like a one-question quiz or something. But
that would still have that same problem, though, for students who have an anxiety of testing. Or we're not going to really get good. We may not get good results from, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we can't just, that would be true on a test or on a quiz, right?
Right.
So we're going to probably have to deal with no matter what. And we have 6 different questions, and we talked about not doing it on the final. That leaves us with 2 midterm exams. That's 3 of these questions on each of the midterm exams if we want to hit all questions. And I think that's assessing the same idea too many times on a midterm. So I think I'm going to have to do some of these in class. And usually my in-class activities are group. Every once in a while I have done individual activities, so I might, you know, so I'll just have these as individual and say sometimes we'll do group, sometimes we'll do individual, and just make it clear to the students beforehand which is which. We don't have quizzes. The way the class is set up right now, we don't have quizzes, so I wouldn't call it that, but I would just say, hey, listen, guys, today this in-class activity is one you're working on your own. So please don't talk to your neighbor about it, and I think that would be reasonable for the most part. But I just can't imagine us fitting all of these onto tests if we plan on asking all of them.
Okay, that was going to say, can we back up a second? Are we asking all 6 of them of every single student?
That's a good question.
I mean, that does seem like a little much.
So the way we picked these 6 was we picked 2 topics that were neutral, 2 topics that tended to have strongly agree, and 2 topics that tended to have strongly disagree. So we could say only do, we could either just pick 1 of each of those and narrow it down to 3, or we could divide up and say, today I'm going to ask the questions that tend to evoke strong opinions, but I'm going to do half of the students will get some version of the texting study, and half of the students will get some version of the, what was our other strong one, marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what 6, neutral?
Well, I'm looking back at your JSM thing.
Yeah.
So we had the 2 that we had considered strong opinions, so, you know, almost half were on the strongly agree side. 2 were our neutral topics, and then we had the split that were neutral and strong opinion.
So do we want to just say pick 1 topic? And the entire class gets that topic. Say, I'm going to, you know, this semester I'm going to do the texting study. Or we could do maybe do them at different institutions. I mean, that kind of confounds, like, the particular context in the institution. But or within each of our institutions, we now, let's see, we have, sorry, I'm thinking out loud. We have 2 versions of, the medical marijuana one?
Yeah.
All right, so we have 2 versions of medical marijuana, at
it looks like. And then the other strong opinion one was texting while driving. And we have two versions of texting while driving. So we can either just pick one of those topics and split the class between the two versions, or we could do both topics, both versions, and split the class between the four. What do you think?
So basically, if we do your second one, each student would receive three questions during the semester.
Yeah.
Because they would get one from each of our categories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder if we're going to have the same thing, because I have the two strong opinion questions, being the texting and the tuition cost.
What was marijuana?
I have that on the split, neutral, and strong opinion, looking at our final GSM PowerPoint.
Oh, okay. So then, sorry, texting and what? Tuition?
Tuition.
Okay, there are then four versions of tuition, right?
So I don't think there would have to be. We could always change. Like, I was the one that wrote those, I think.
Yeah. One of the reasons I liked having the four versions is because then if we were just to do random assignment, I kind of hope we would get, like, I don't know if this would make a difference if we did random assignment or if we did blocking. But the idea is we would get a mix of people, kind of all possible scenarios. So I'm almost thinking of this as like some sort of factorial design. So we have whether or not the sample is good, and we have whether or not the conclusions agree with the opinion. And then for each opinion strength, we're going to see students in each of those cells. So we're, to some sense, our factors are strength, sampling method, and whether it agrees or disagrees. So the strength of the opinion, whether the quality of the sampling method, and then whether the conclusion agrees or disagrees with the student's opinion. So we should have people in all of those cells, which I think would give us a very rich picture in the end. It would certainly allow us to explore our hypothesis thoroughly. Is that too much for the first time around? Are we biting off more than we can chew here?
Well, I was just kind of, you know, throwing stuff around in my brain. I like the idea of the four different scenarios of one question. I think maybe if we pick one of each in terms of the topics, so one strong opinion, one neutral, one whatever the other category was. What was the other category?
The split.
The split. And then take the other three, and then, because we haven't talked about the interview idea, maybe those could be the topics for the interviews. I don't know. It was just a thought I had. Where
so
we
even
say,
right now for a pilot study, we could just look at, you know, choosing one of each of the questions and seeing how they go.
Yeah.
In the IRB, I would certainly show them all six so that we could use we can use whatever we want then without having to worry. But I actually kind of like that idea of maybe saving some of these as interview questions.
So, you know, if we have somebody who had a strong opinion about something and they answered the inference question or whichever particular question on the test question in a certain way, and we want to follow up with them, we have another question that's similarly designed but on a different topic that then we can, during the interview process, have them go through it again, but then we are talking directly to them, and they can explain their thinking a little bit more without repeating the same question that they saw on the test. But we've set it up so that it's essentially the same idea. They just don't know that it's the same idea, that it's a bad sampling or a good sampling technique on something that they had a most likely a strong opinion about. I mean, I realize with a single student, they might have had a strong opinion on question one and not a strong opinion on the second question. But
so actually, for single students, we can kind of look at that, and that might also affect who we bring in the interview.
Especially since this is our pilot study, and with it being October, I have no problem putting, you know, a couple on the final this semester if I have to. I would just like to avoid it in future semesters.
Okay.
Yeah. Are we doing, that was something I've thought about after the last conference call. I thought we were piloting this semester, but then, Hurley, you had mentioned not piloting until spring.
I'm hoping we'll be done. My IRB was very slow. So now that it's October, and we end, like, our finals are the week after Thanksgiving. So I really don't know if I will have approval in time. I may have approval to put something on the final. So I might be able to pilot one of these questions. But I imagine we might need to do a bigger pilot. We might need to play that by ear. I think we have to do the full IRB at this point. So this, the IRB should just be, this is what we plan on doing, and then we mention sometime between this semester and next we might be piloting some materials. But these are everything, you know, we plan on using at this point. And I think we need to write up the IRB with kind of the full study in mind, and then we can figure out the timing as appropriate. I'm just concerned about really being able to pilot much during this semester.
Okay. Yeah, we might be able to, like, test run one or two of the questions on an assessment to see how much, what kind of responses we're getting to some of our questions.
Because
I'm looking at the bottom here that, Tara, you kind of gave codes for the different kind of reasonings.
That was her list.
But, I'm sorry, that
I
was
mean, from the last page is pretty much Herla's ideas. I just put them in flowchart form.
Okay.
Based on the email I got from Herla, those are all her ideas.
So we could start to look at, you know, just how much detail are we going to get from our students on
mm-hmm.
those particular items? And maybe we could flesh out a little bit more, start to flesh out a little bit more what we're looking for and what we're going to get. I don't know if that makes any sense, but. So. But I guess maybe the next big thing, I'm sorry, it's just, we're starting to run a little low on time and have students coming in. The next big thing is the IRB, because it sounds like we got a pretty good idea. So maybe get a draft of IRBs done for everybody.
Yeah,
I think that sounds like a good idea. As questions pop up, we can email them back and forth between the groups. Does anyone need to do any more editing of their research questions?
I don't think. I think we all went, I mean, we went through them at those two conference calls. My impression was that we were all comfortable with them.
So we can, I mean, there might be some formatting issues, but other than that, we can more or less just copy and paste those into an IRB application saying these would be the questions we'd be planning on asking. And then we need to decide which 10 of the survey questions we're going to ask. I mean, well, we know 6 of them. We have to decide, I guess, what the other 4 are going to be. We had 35.
Sorry, hold on. Sorry, somebody's knocking on my door. Hold on. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Okay.
Should we all just kind of take a vote, and maybe we can even do this via email, take a vote at which questions we want to, what are the other four questions we think we should include?
I said let's do that by email.
Maybe we can list our top eight, and then whichever ones show up the most often, we'll pick those.
I think that sounds great.
All right. So pick your top eight, and then whichever ones. And if none come up, then, well, I don't know what we'll do.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about it when we come to it.
Okay. Herla, does this, the second page of this, does it accurately depict what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So IRB, everybody's going to do research methodology. We still have to work. I'll update this based on discussion today, and we can continue working on it by email. Lit review, we didn't get to again.
Yeah, we keep doing that.
When I was looking through them, Randy had mentioned that there were some on this list that were already lit reviews for confirmation bias. I was wondering if we shouldn't each take one of them and read through it so we know what's already been covered. That might help us eliminate areas that we shouldn't focus on. Because we haven't read some of the ones that are on here. For example, at the very bottom, there's record 17. What is confirmation bias, and when do people have it? We haven't read that one. There was another one that I saw. There was the Nickerson one that I think that, Lee, you've read through that one, and I've gone through that one.
Yeah, I skimmed through it.
But anyway, there were a few on here that were already, and I was wondering if it would be worth it if we each kind of took one, read through them, and so we know to not focus on those areas. I don't know.
No, that's actually a really good idea, I think.
So there's record 5, confirmation, disconfirmation, and information in hypothesis testing. Record 2, confirmation and matching biases in hypothesis testing. So I figured I can send a list to us by email, and maybe we can each just pick one. And
I think that'll work really well.
Yeah, I think so too.
And then that we can, you know, we know it'd stay away from those areas, and then we can look at what else we have. I was also thinking about going back through this list and categorizing it. I'm trying to split up the articles into different categories. But I don't know if that would be useful or not.
One thing we can do, too, is so I did try the Zotero, which Holly Lynn had recommended, and Jackie checked it out, too. So Jackie and I both have accounts, and I was able to create, like, a group where we could all add stuff to Zotero, and we could do it a little at a time as we review it. And one of the nice things is you can tag posts. So we could tag it however we wanted, and then it can do the categorization for us. So we can say, give me everything that has this tag, and it'll pull all of those together so that things that fit in multiple categories, we can see them in multiple categories very easily.
So we would need a list of common tags that we would be using? So
yeah.
Somebody would have to put together a short document that has a list of tags?
Yeah. I think that's something that would probably evolve kind of naturally as, and I think there's even an option where you can say, show me all of the tags that are here. So
okay.
That would kind of be the list. So maybe before you go to tag something, look at the existing tags and see if it should match one of the existing ones. If not, just kind of make your own. That way it's something that kind of, it's easy to check because it's within the software. And it looked pretty easy to navigate. I mean, it looked like it had some cool features. You could attach an article, so like if you had the PDF file, you could save the PDF in Zotero so that you never had to go look it up again. Some things it would automatically enter for you, although none of the websites I was looking at. Like there's supposed to be some icon that opens up that, or that you'll see in the, I think the menu bar, that if you click that icon, it automatically enters the author information and the publication information and all that. but it's not that hard to type in kind of on your own, and you can add a full abstract in the notes section if you want, or add your own notes so that we can still annotate things. I think that even though it might take a little bit of extra startup to get into this, I think what would be nice about it is when it comes to categorizing and starting to synthesize, it'll mean we're not duplicating effort at that point.
Does it only work in Firefox?
I think it's a Firefox add-on. So, yeah, I think it only works in Firefox is the downside to it. There were other options of software. This was the one Holly Lynn recommended the most, and it is free if you have Firefox and if you use Firefox. So that was why I suggested this one. We could certainly try something else. I know you said you don't have it at home, but you have it at work. Is that right, Tara?
Yes. And I will never, ever, ever, ever my entire life install it on my home computer again.
Yeah, I know you said it went.
Yeah, it did horrible things. I use Google Chrome at home, but like I said, I have it on my work computer, so I can access anything I need to there. And I can certainly upload stuff and do stuff there.
Or if you really, if you want, we can check out, I'm sure there are other free options we could look at. This was just the one I looked at quickly one day.
I mean, I could always see if it works without, too. I just didn't. Right. I didn't have a chance to download that.
Yeah. That's an idea, too. So my suggestion would just be, as we're reading new things, maybe start to add them to the group. And I don't have it on my laptop today, so I can't remember what I called the group, but I can look that up when I'm at work and email you guys so you know to look for it and you can be connected with it, too. And that way we have it all in one place that we can all access, we can all update. It's then hopefully a little bit easier to organize and find things.
So have you taken some of the ones from the Google Docs and then put them into?
I think I did like 2 test examples. So there's not much there right now. Because I was just playing with it quickly one day, but there are 2 examples. I think the Kaplan article is there, and I can't remember what else.
Well, and Hurley, you had to invite me to join the group. That was the only way I could get access to it.
Okay, so I'll have to do that from
So I think they might have to establish accounts, and then you have to invite them.
Yeah, once you guys get accounts, let me know, and then I can invite you to the group, and then you should be able to see it, and you should be able to add to it.
One thing quickly. The article that Jennifer Kaplan suggested we read, The Empirical Case for 2 Systems of Reasoning, did anyone try to read that one?
No, I looked at some of the context articles, The Tyranny of Context, and the other one that we had gotten from Andy, but I didn't look at Jennifer had recommended.
Does anyone have a psychology background? I started going through it, and it seemed like I didn't have enough of a psychology background to really follow closely. And maybe it was just I was late. It was late and I was tired, but it just seemed like it was much better read by somebody who has many more psychology classes than I've had. I don't know. I personally have difficulty following everything.
If you could send that my way, I can try to read it. I had to take a few psych classes for my secondary ed major, so I could try.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've had ed psych and childhood psych, but I don't know why. I found it not the easiest of the articles that we've read to interpret and come up with anything on it. All right, we're looking at 11:05. Lee, you said you had students coming,
so do
we want to choose our next conference call?
And again, do we want to try it to be quick so we can get IRBs in and actually start the lit review topic again?
Do we want to try for 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks. You want to do 10 a.m. Friday, October 15th?
Works for me. What about you guys?
That's fine by me.
Yeah, right.
It should be okay for me. I might have to do it from home if my parents are coming out, but I should be able to do it either way.
Randy, are you still here?
Let's see. It was the 15th. I'm just checking my calendar here. It looks like I have a meeting at that time, but don't let that stop you from meeting on that day. I mean, Holly Lynn or Felicity might be able to make it too on that day.
Okay. I just seem to remember that all of us are, all the other times, it's just not good with all our teaching schedules, so.
Right.
Yeah, it seems to work for us.
Yeah.
Is 2 weeks okay then? Or do we want to try to go faster?
So, 2 weeks would be better for me than one, I think.
Yeah, I don't know that I can put my IRB together in a week, so.
Okay.
2 weeks would be better for me.
So Friday, October 15th, 10 a.m.?
Yep.
Good.
And do IRB. We'll choose our questions by email for the opinion survey. We'll try to finalize or continue working on research methodology by email. And then we'll try to focus on lit review with that call.
Yeah.
Will
you send out some articles before then? So
I will.
We can look at, even if we can't read them in full, if we can kind of skim them and get an idea. And then I believe for the next call, I'm the recorder for this one, so that makes me the organizer for the next one.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we each move down accordingly.
So I'm moving to synthesizer, I think. And I'm moving to recorder.
Yeah. It's always a little faster than your recorder, isn't it?
But you guys let me skip it when I have the baby, so you know it's definitely my turn.
All right. I think this all sounds really good.
All right.
All right.
All right. Have a good day. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Yeah. See you guys.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.